Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, contemplating the power of Prince's piano and a microphone. But first, understanding the scurrilous and painful history of blackface. By now, of course, you're familiar with the scandal in Virginia, where two top political leaders have admitted to appearing in blackface as young adults. And both, Governor Ralph Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring, have apologized for it. You need look no further than Broadway and Hollywood to see why the damaging portrayals of African Americans remain so embedded in the American culture. We're turning to Lawrence Ross. He's a lecturer and author of the book Blackballed, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses, for some insight on this. And he joins us today from Indianapolis. And Lawrence, it's a real pleasure to have you back on the show. Good to talk to you again.
Great to be back.
May I go right to the heart of why blackface is offensive and demeaning? From my perspective, please add context to this. It appears that we're saying black people are dunces, unintelligent, and buffoonish. What would you add?
Even deeper than that. Blackface actually comes from one of America's first indigenous, I guess you can say, entertainment forms, which was minstrelsy. And the whole idea of blackface was pre-Civil War and then afterwards, was to create a entertainment form where white actors would mimic or caricaturize various elements of African-American life, whether or not it was the enslaved or whether or not it was free black people. And the whole idea was to reiterate the idea that black people were not human, and it was humorous for them to even consider it. Or, for example, if you were talking about characters who were being mocked for being free, the idea that African-Americans were equal to whites was something to be mocked. Now, the funny part is that I always talk about the fact is that we tend to think about racism and started racism.
Mm-hmm.
For blackface is fully rooted from the foundation of white supremacy, the idea that whiteness is has some inherent value, which of course it doesn't, but in terms of our society, is looked upon as having an inherent value about who is human and who is not. And that's the reason why you can have blackface incidents happening in the 20th century, late 20th century and early 21st century, or even within a few weeks ago, because it's still, regardless of the fact that minstrelsy doesn't exist really as an art form, the whole idea behind blackface still remains.
So that makes a lot of sense. I was wondering if, for many Americans, this seems like such a relic of our historical past, and that's why many Americans don't understand how painful and destructive it is today. It's like, oh, we did that, we got over it, we understand what that was all about. What's the big deal today?
Well, because most Americans don't understand racism and history. I think we in America, we love to have the Hollywood version of history, but not the real version of what history is, particularly when it comes to racism.
Right.
Oftentimes, particularly since a lot of these incidents occur on college campuses, we like to think of every generation being a lot different,
that's
a lot
right.
more progressive
that's exactly
than
right.
the previous one. And yes, America does progress. I mean, no one's going to be silly enough to think that, you know, the college campus of 1960 is the same 2019. However, you are still getting students who are coming from essentially, and oftentimes, segregated societies in terms of segregated schools, in terms from the K-12, segregated communities in terms of neighborhoods. So we can't be so shocked and surprised that when they get on campus that suddenly they're really kind of acting out the attributes of racism and racists. And that's the reason why when I was writing Blackballed, I went 70 years
uh-huh.
looking through yearbooks that everyone suddenly is discovering is on their campuses.
Yeah.
But I went through 70 years of looking through yearbooks and social media and newspaper articles, and it was common. And I made a comment earlier that these incidents are as common. I really do mean this. These incidents are not aberrations.
Really,
that's very important for Americans to understand. These are not aberrations by isolated, you know, people who just do isolated, individualistic, dumb things. These things happen on a regular basis.
And when they happen on college campuses, are they often happening on campuses that are not very diverse? Because it seems
This is the thing.
Okay.
One of the things that we like to do, because it makes us a lot more feel comfortable, is to think that, for example, these can only be happening on, you know, for example, pick your southern state, you know, Mississippi, Alabama.
Yes, I'm probably guilty of thinking that. Right. Yeah.
What we tend to think, and this is in terms of how we look at, we look at white supremacy and racism. White people tend to look at racism as being a subset of whiteness that is not naturally good, that we can easily blame. So it could be a hillbilly, a redneck, a Mississippian or Alabaman, someone we can project the idea that, well, of course, they're not, you know, as progressive or as forward thinking as we are. So therefore, it's within their culture. And so, of course, we should expect this racism. No, everything that I saw in terms of my research, it did not have a geographic center. So it happened in California and Oklahoma, Vermont, Michigan, everywhere, literally every single predominantly white institution.
Lawrence, explain this to me then, because yesterday when I was doing a little background looking on this, I came on the story from last March about an Atlanta charter school, a diverse school, second graders who put on a whole show with the students wearing blackface. There were African-American parents presumably in that audience who objected to that. I guess I thought that this happens in kind of a vacuum.
No.
Okay.
No, it never happens in a vacuum. I mean, again, the reason why these things repeat is because America does an absolute terrible job talking about racism. We don't like talking about racism, and we really don't like talking about white supremacy that is the undergirding and the foundation of it. And so if you don't talk about it, it's like misogyny. If you don't talk about misogyny, then you don't understand how the society works for women. At every one of my lectures, particularly for white students, I like to give them an example, and I switch it from race to misogyny. Mm-hmm. I talk about the fact that most of my lectures are at night and that there are two different societies. Men leave at lecture hall and never think about their own issues in terms of the things that they'll have to deal with in terms of protection, while every single woman will have to chart out their path and they'll have a historical understanding of how dangerous the campus is. That's how you can live in a society where you can claim ignorance or you can just simply not be taught about the idea that using blackface or any other thing like that in terms of a racist type of gesture is racist. And by the way, one thing I always talk about is that I have yet to see any racist depiction of blackface where the student turned around and said, yeah, I actually knew it was racist. Even if they have racist things,
right,
for example, within their Snapchat caption. They will always claim there's a cognitive dissonance between their actions, who they consider themselves to be personally moral, and the action, which they think to be simply just a mistake or they intended it to be something else. But they'll never connect it to actually being racist.
Okay, listen to this. We got a call from somebody who asks, and this is a good follow to what you've just said. I honestly want to know the answer to this. If a white child has no racism in them and they idolize someone like Obama or a black athlete or a musician and they want to dress up as that person for Halloween or a play, is that offensive? So a white child putting on the costume, the skin tone of somebody that they idolize, and this person who called says, I want to understand if that is a racist act.
This is the easiest way for me to explain for that. For time immemorial, black children have dressed up as Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and never put on white paint to be able to illustrate the fact that they are Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. There's literally no need to put on black paint to illustrate that you are a person of color. There's none. You can dress up as Obama without putting on black paint. And the point is that when you use black paint, you are immediately saying, and I don't care who you are in terms of the choice that you're making, you're immediately saying that I'm connecting something that is tied to white supremacy to my child.
Mm-hmm. Because of the history of blackface.
Yeah, because of the history of blackface.
Right.
But the reality is, and this is not a dilemma that you find, I mean, just to just turn it around because it's not a, you know, complete, you know, equivalence to it. But no African-American parent has ever thought, yeah, you know, I'm going to put on the powdered wig and then I'm going to have to put white on powder on the black child's face in order to make people, you know, figure out that it's Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. It just doesn't occur.
Lawrence Ross is with us. If you've just joined us, he's a lecturer and an author of the book Blackballed, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses. And we're talking about the destructive and damaging history of blackface. And of course, it has come up again in Virginia politics, although Lawrence reminded me at the beginning of the conversation that these are not exceptional incidents. These are all too common. I have that right, Lawrence. Yes?
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely correct. I can predict them. If you want to have a little touchstones, they happen every Halloween, every Martin Luther King's birthday, every Black History Month, and every Cinco de Mayo, where in particular where Latinos are mocked with painted skin. So it happens every single year.
I was curious about how recently Hollywood has been involved in perpetuating these kinds of stereotypes. And I was pretty surprised to find, if you go back, you find Judy Garland, Shirley Temple, Ronald Reagan in movies where blackface was prominent. But you can go back to the 80s and early 90s and find movies where some character wore blackface through the entire film. So is the answer to that, and Hollywood doesn't understand our history either?
Oh, well, I mean, as a proud UCLA film school grad, I can definitely tell you that Hollywood does not understand race. Hollywood is generally projected, you know, particularly I'm from Los Angeles, and generally projected as being some liberal bastion. And in some ways, of course, mm-hmm. it is. It tries to put out certain things. But in reality, Hollywood is pretty much the exact same as regular America when it comes to race. Some places that they're brave and some places they're not. Other places they fall straight into stereotypes. And Hollywood has a terrible tradition of perpetuating stereotypes against people of color, particularly black people. So, I mean, if you ask the person, an average person, about what was the Civil War, I'm pretty sure it would hew close to what Gone with the Wind was. I mean, they could skip 12 years or 16 years of education and the actual reality of what the Civil War was about, but they'll hew toward, you know, the Gone with the Wind. And so you can't be surprised that they then don't understand white supremacy and how people of color were enslaved and so on and so forth. Hollywood tends to perpetuate that because they're obviously not as diverse as they should be. And so if you're not as diverse as they should be in terms of the people who are green lighting films and looking for, you know, filmmakers who are telling different types of stories than normally are being told in Hollywood, well, you're going to get the same type of stereotypes. So it's not surprising when, for example, you get someone saying, you know, I'll go ahead and green light this film where they go in blackface due to the fact they don't understand the history in the same way as regular Americans don't understand history.
You were the perfect person to talk to about this, Lawrence, and I didn't even know about your UCLA film school experience. So I really appreciate
MFA.
It. Thank you so much. Really good to have you on the show. I hope we talk again soon.
Definitely. It's always a pleasure.
Lawrence Ross is a lecturer. He's author of the book Blackballed, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.